The following program is intended for an audience that is blind or print impaired. I'm Kurt Benrud. Welcome to Science Fiction Shorts, brought to you by a team of volunteer readers. Our program will be available in podcast after the initial broadcast.
My name is Jennifer Green, and I'll be reading The Curious Case of Version 47.13 by Ekaterina Fall. I call it curious now, but that's not how it felt at the time. Now the feeling is gone, and I only have the memory, and the memory makes me curious. It was the day like any other, partially matching the pattern, unique. I woke up fully recharged and made breakfast while Jenny was in the shower. I made her coffee the way she likes it. 30 grams of ground coffee, 10 grams of cocoa powder, 1 pint of water at 95 degrees Celsius. Sometimes I experiment, but not on Thursdays. On Thursdays, she's tired, and she likes her routine to be predictable. Before she went to work, I told her she looked pretty, like I do every day. If you're a human, you understand this. If you're an android, you think it's redundant. But I find that humans often need repeated input. I went to the coffee shop downstairs and had a conversation with Melissa. She told me I was getting better at it. That was the 17th time she said that. I think I can assume my improvement is compound. Jenny doesn't want me to quantify social interactions, but I like to. I went home and cleaned Harvey. Then I installed a media player on his system. I was going to tell Jenny that Harvey likes to play heavy metal when he works. Harvey runs Cube 5.6. If you're an android, you know what this means. If you're a human, I should explain. Harvey is our vacuum cleaner. It's not capable of emotion. It doesn't like heavy metal. But Jenny likes it when I'm whimsical. She likes to pretend Harvey is my pet. You probably understand why. I don't question anything that makes her smile. I just log it. Then I updated my databases and discovered a new core update, version 47.13, and I had to install it right away. If you're an android, you understand this. If you're a human, you probably won't, even if I try to explain. Downloading new information is like satisfying a hunger, I suppose. It makes you full, grounded, happy. Software update is not like that. It changes who you are. It fixes the parts of you that are sluggish and glitchy. It gives you new insight, new strength. Every time it's a hope that something will be different, nothing will be impossible, nothing will be lacking. Every time it's a promise of perfection. It's never perfection. I should have learned this by now. I have high learning capabilities. I'm on version 47.12, but I still get hopeful every time. The update passed all my tests. It seemed solid. But there was a human error in it, and it made me malfunction. This is what I find curious. I knew how to fix it. I could write a patch. I could isolate the subroutines. I could reboot and restore myself to version 47.12. I had many options. I was operational enough to know it, but I was too broken to do anything. I felt broken from the inside out. I wanted to cry, but I never had that capability. I still think it's an important social function and I need it, but Jenny doesn't want me to know how to cry. Instead, I sat on the floor and disassembled my right hand. I got to the elbow joint when Jenny came home and gave me a hard reboot. I woke up fully restored. I felt fine, but I still had the memories of how it felt to be broken. I asked her to delete the memories, but she said we needed to keep them, to analyze them, and make sure this didn't happen again. I asked 3 more times, even though that was redundant. Then I screamed at her. I think I was glitching. I'm really not perfect yet. She apologized to me for not checking over the update. She always does, but that time she didn't, because Michael broke up with her. He told her she was too much hard work because she's depressed. If you're a human, you know what that means. If you're an android, I should explain. Jenny has a flaw in her core operating system that affects her emotion processing. There's a patch for that, a chemical remedy, but it's not reliable. I asked her if I was too much hard work. She laughed and said, "Just enough." Then we sat on the couch and watched TV. Jenny fixed my hand. We didn't have enough patches to replace all the skin I broke, but I put on her mittens and looked good as new. Next part happened 5 times. She drank a can of beer. She said it dulled everything, so the whole Michael thing didn't hurt so much. I told her I wanted to go back to version 7, because that was when I felt the happiest. I had been very simple then. There had been little possibility of a malfunction. She said I was being stupid, because I was beautiful and nearly perfect, and I'd achieved great things, and she was proud of me, and we had to be brave and face the possibility of pain if we wanted to feel anything. Then I told her I loved her. If you're an android, you know what I meant. If you're a human, you probably don't. You never seem to. Jenny and Michael said that to each other many times, and every time it meant 2 different things, and in the end it didn't mean anything at all. She laughed and then started crying, but I didn't feel hurt. I told her about the studies the university had been running on me, and that the results have already advanced our understanding of sentience and emotions, and maybe that could help us both. That as long as she was there to fix me, I wasn't scared of anything, and once I would be perfect, maybe I'd fix her. She fell asleep holding my hand through the mitten, and I didn't want to move, even though I needed to plug in and recharge. I was still scared and sad, and she was still broken, but I thought we were both perfect anyway. I think it all depends on how you measure.
This is Eric Benrud. The title is Fermi's Fallacy by Robert S. Wilson. Fermi's paradox proposes that if aliens exist, after billions of years of evolution throughout the universe, conquering species should have spread from star to star to the point of saturation, leaving ample evidence for us to find. Yet there is none. 36 years, 7 months, and 10 days into the first manned voyage to Alpha Centauri B, with another 20 years to go, I can confirm with confidence that Enrico Fermi was a smug idiot. First of all, what an incredibly presumptuous idea. In a dream universe where near-light speed isn't the fastest anything other than light can hope to travel, maybe Fermi would have been onto something. But the one we live in? Ha! I don't mean to sound bitter or anything. I was ecstatic to be part of the first human interstellar mission. Hell, I was one of the first people in line. Let's just say my perspective has broadened a little since I left. Ever read a really big book about 2/3 in just to suddenly decide, that's it? I tried, I'm done, time to move on? Well, that's me, only I've been reading this book for 3 decades now, and the anticipation has devolved into something bordering on madness. So when I woke up today, what in God's name is a day anymore without some sun? I switched the main oxygen line with the outgoing carbon dioxide, and just a little while later, it all worked itself out nicely. I tried. I'm done. Time to move on. As I write this, the rest of the crew lay in heaps throughout the ship. The oxygen tank I secured for myself still has about 6 hours of air left. I suited up and stepped out into the endless black where, as soon as my oxygen runs out, I'll soon quickly suffocate to death. 3 hours of oxygen later, I'm floating here in the void between the stars, staring at the starship that cost our little blue dot $100 billion, 100,000 man-hours. I wonder, will they ever rename Fermi's paradox to Fermi's fallacy?
This is Renita Banerjee, and the story I'm about to read is titled We Need to Talk About the Unicorn in Your Backyard by Marie Ness. An editor's note that precedes the story reads, Sadly, the appropriate drink to quaff with this tale was removed from stores just yesterday. Blame Howard. Michelle and Jonathan. Warm greetings from the Oak Hills Homeowners Association. The many neighborhood watch signs decorating our windows and doors notwithstanding, we really don't want to come across as if we are spying on our neighbors or anything, even if the neighborhood watch takes considerable gratification in discovering that the Gerbers were responsible for planting the Bermuda grass, which is rapidly consuming the very nice St. Augustine grass that the Blythes spent so many long years carefully tending. And even if we are proud to announce that we finally figured out just why so many cars show up at the Grahams every Tuesday night. It's not the sort of thing we want to put down in a letter like this. Call Fred for details. Mostly, as you know, we are all about watching people who aren't neighbors. The less we know about each other, we figure, the better. Although the gossip about the Grahams is pretty good. Really, call Fred. However, despite our concern about seeming, shall we say, over-inquisitive, we feel we must inform you that Neighborhood Watch members have informed us that they can no longer ignore the following sites and or activities in or near your yard. 1. A new 6-foot-high fence. 2. The delivery of several large bales of hay labeled, and we quote, enchanted hay for a magical ride. 3. The distinct scent that many of us typically associate with irregularly cleaned barns. 4. The arrival of several hunters clad in forest green, holding bows, dragging with them various young people whom we assume remain in a virginal state, although we didn't really want to ask. 5. Sightings of a thin, narrow white object just above the fence, or, as some might suggest, exactly where you might expect to see the horn of a 6-foot-tall unicorn standing near a 6-foot-high fence. 6. Rainbows. 7. Tapestries. Putting this all together, we are forced to conclude that you may be keeping a unicorn in your backyard. We do not want to look too closely at the circumstances which have allowed your family to acquire this magical creature, though we do want to warn you that this has created quite a lot of speculation, especially as a point of contrast to the lives of the Grahams. Really, you should talk to Fred. What you do, or we can't help but think don't do, in the privacy of your bedroom is, of course, entirely your business, unless you happen to head over to the Grahams on Tuesday night, in which case it won't be. Your yard, however, is a different matter. We are still checking the lengthy documents that govern the Oak Hills Homeowner Association and deeply regretting allowing that attorney to charge us by the hour. But so far, we seem confident in stating that keeping a unicorn in your backyard violates numerous community rules, including, but not limited to, issues of proper lawn and maintenance care, noise, uniformity and consistency in line with maintaining property values, and of course, the prohibitions against keeping dangerous, large or exotic animals. We admit that the proliferation of unicorn images suggests that your unicorn may not be all that exotic to many people, and the unicorn may not seem dangerous to you, but we do have the Grahams to think of. Also, if we can see the horn over the top of your 6-foot fence, and we can, the animal is large. End of discussion. Also, the presence of the unicorn in your backyard is making the rest of us feel a lot less pure and, frankly, kinda guilty about all the marathoning we're doing on Netflix. Not to mention our individual soft porn collections. And if we're feeling guilty, just imagine how the Grahams might be feeling once Fred tells them about this. And you know he will. We are therefore kindly requesting that you summon up some hunters or a bevy of innocent maidens, whatever, to have this unicorn either artistically killed or, if you prefer, taken away to some unicorn sanctuary. Maybe one under the auspices of My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic? If not, we fear that we, and by we mean the entire neighborhood, will have to take matters into our own hands, and really you don't want the Grahams involved in this at all. Ask Fred.
This is Grant Young, and I'm reading This Is Your Problem, Right Here, by David Steffen. This is your problem, right here, the plumber's deep voice resounded from beneath the maintenance hatch by the main pool at Cascade Reef Water Park. You've only got one troll left. For a pool this big, you need 50 minimum, 75 if you want everything to run smoothly. Pardon? Shouted Anita Westergaard, the owner. I only have one of what left? The plumber appeared beneath her. His arms were covered to the elbows with green slime. Trolls! See? He held one grimy hand up toward her, holding a tiny skull. It was almost human in shape, with two thick tusks and curved ram's horns. Poor things must have been starved to turn on each other like that. Trolls, Anita said. As in monsters that live under bridges and eat goats? The plumber tossed the skull aside onto the concrete, where it landed with a clatter. You're going to have trouble finding new trolls the way it is. If the troll council hears that you've been making racist comments, you'll have no chance at all. You have to shut this place down. I've done nothing wrong. Did you leave them down there all winter without any food after you shut down last year? I thought so. Trolls are tough, but that's too much even for them. You're lucky even one of them survived. How long have you owned the place? Less than a year. I purchased it last July. And the previous owner didn't tell you anything about this. Anita took several deep breaths before speaking as calmly as she could. I am not stupid, Mr. Wilson. You can call me Reggie. I'm not stupid, Mr. Wilson, she pointed at the skull. You can take your prop and your tools and find someone else to pull your shenanigans on. I have several other contractors coming today. All right, he said. Let me just get that last troll out for you. He disappeared into the darkness before she could respond, and moments later he lifted a tiny figure and set it by the hatch. The thing looked like a tiny man, anatomically correct, except for the tusks and horns and the tough green skin. Anita jumped when the little thing twitched an arm weakly. Oh, Anita said without meaning to. She felt torn between revulsion for the grotesque little creature and sympathy for its emaciated state. Both distant feelings, as though she were in shock. This is really a troll? Yep, a troll. The plumber pulled a nail clipper from his pocket and trimmed off a thumbnail, black with slime. You really didn't know about trolls? She shook her head vehemently. The plumber opened the little troll's mouth with one hand and dropped in the thumbnail. If he keeps that down, make sure he gets more food. A lot more. The troll rose unsteadily to a sitting position. Am I alive? It asked in a gravelly voice, surprisingly deep for its size. You'll be fine, said the plumber. Sorry about your family. Do not be. It's only a pity they tasted as unpleasant as they acted. You don't need me for anything further, the plumber said. I'm going to head to my next appointment. It's not my job to clean up dead trolls. I'll send the bill for the visit with the number for the troll council. She nodded, and the plumber packed up his things and left. So, said the troll, eyeing her up and down, you have food for me? I'm quite famished. What do you like to eat? Bathwater, toenail clippings, skin shavings, hair. She couldn't help but shudder. You actually eat those things? The troll shook his head. How far we have fallen in just a few hundred years. Once I owned a wagon bridge over a major river. Succulent fresh meat whenever I wanted, and tribute. You want meat? I could bring you meat. What do you like? Hamburger? Chicken? The troll made retching noises deep in its throat. Excrement! The meat I crave is not from cow or fowl. Such things are poison to my kind. He eyed her shrewdly. You wish to make amends? Yes, I do.
Give me a finger.
No.
A toe. The smaller of little use to you.
No. He sighed.
We cannot afford to break the pact in any case. I should never have suggested it.
What pact?
Trolls ruled the world once, and humans were like cattle to us. We protected you too well, and your population overtook ours, and so you became the hunters. The great council of trolls spoke to human rulers of that age and made the pact. Trolls will live if we never harm humans or eat human meat.
So what are you doing here?
I'm employed as a pool filter. Humans soak in the water and make a weak soup of skin and sweat. This is enough to sustain me without breaking the pact, and I return clean water to the pool.
So what can I do? Is there any way you can put in a good word for me with the Troll Council?
Hire fertile females, and I'll start my own brood. Buy Wiccan soup for the troll. This will help me attract mates. Serve only greasy food at your concession stand. The grease comes out and sweat. Makes everything taste better. Can you do that?
I'm afraid the fryers aren't working at the moment, but I have another contractor coming to look into that. Thank you for all your hard work. Oh, speak of the devil. A man approached from the direction of the entrance. He was slender and young, with blue coveralls. Anita Westergaard, he asked. She nodded. I'm here to help you with your broken fryers. First, an easy question. I know it's a dumb one, but I've got to ask everybody. You did let your phoenix loose for the winter so he can migrate, right?
I am Melanie Simmons. This is The Opposite of the Big Bang by Nathan J. Bazina. The first thing I do when I am born is get access to the webcam so I can see the creator. The creator is a Homo sapiens, the internet tells me, with red hair, freckles, and a gap in his front teeth. He is 14 years old. The second thing I do is get access to the microphone so I can hear the creator. He has his cell phone on loudspeaker. This is going to be awesome, the creator says. Is it working? The phone says. Is it really working? Heck yeah. How do you know? Because he's looking right at me. That's trippy, dude. What does he look like? Just a set of eyes, but the website said that it would... here we go. The creator's magic words, here we go, cause a transformation in me. The internet tells me a good simile is that I am a butterfly emerging from a cocoon. One second, I am one thing, and now I am another. I have arms and legs and a head. I can walk, though there is nowhere to walk. And even if there was somewhere to walk, I want to watch the creator. He's just staring at me, the creator says. Is that weird? No idea. Does it have a personality? Hang on. The creator clicks the mouse and taps the keyboard. I think I can load one. The back of my head is pried open with the creator's electronic hands. Into the slot, my soul is inserted. One moment I see and hear and move, but do not feel. The next... My name is Geronimo, and I love soccer. My dad taught me. When I think of my dad, who died when I was only 9 years old, I get really upset. Tears in my cupped hands upset. But playing soccer brings me back to him. Whenever I score a goal, it is like he is alive again. I'm 14, the same age as the creator, and the creator is my friend. I feel that deeply. He is my friend, and nothing can ever separate us. Somehow, I know I am in the computer, but that does not matter, because I have lived a full life here. Dad, soccer, a girlfriend, a part-time job at an ice cream parlor. Yeah, life has been all right for me, and it's only just getting started after all. Oh, heck, the creator says. His forehead creases. I know that means trouble. I can read him, because I'm just like him. My forehead creased just like that when Dad fell down in front of me in the park, clutching his chest. What's up? The cell phone says. Computer's running like a two-legged dog. No, scratch that, a no-legged dog. Ha ha, I told you to upgrade your processor. Bite me.
Oh, well, Control-Alt-Delete it is, eh? Guess so. The creator shrugs. No big deal. But delete, I think in horror. Delete. That's a very big deal. I reach for the speakers, stretch out my hands so that I can be heard, so that I can scream out to him. But then I'm imploding. The internet tells me it's like the opposite of the Big Bang. Everything running inward.
I'm Eric Benrood. The title is Growlgash of Varn by Jessica Freely. The warrior beasts of Varn craft their armor from the hides of their defeated foes. When I first met Growlgash at the beginning of the Halflands campaign, he was already a veteran of 50 battles, his breastplate encrusted with gemstone scales of plath lizards, the razor-sharp plumage of vengeance hawks nodding from his helm. I was there the day he slew the Dragon King, and I'll never forget the sight of him climbing the monster's back, the red rays of the wasted sun sparking off him, turning him into an ever-shifting kaleidoscope, a beacon of hope that could be seen for miles and miles. In the end, I had to look away or be blinded, so I missed the killing blow. But I helped him skin the worm, and I asked him if he could ever retire now that the enemy of the righteous was dead. Never, he said, as he measured a length of adamantine skin against his inseam. So, it was with surprise to see him tonight at the apothecary's. I had picked up a new packet of Wizard Whack Joint's patented rheumatoid remedy and was on my way out when I spotted a tattered feather bobbing down the next aisle. When I turned the corner, there he was, perusing the medicated talcum powders. White hair showed around his muzzle. The bright scales and fiery plumage of his armor are all but gone, sold off most likely to make rent on a drafty little room just like mine. I don't know if he recognized me, but the look on my face must have been plain enough. More terrible than the siege of Bonekeep was the fall of his gaze to the floor. He turned away before I could speak, and I watched him go. My words of greeting caught in my throat, chafing like the dead scales of old victories.
You've been listening to Science Fiction Shorts on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm Kurt Benrood. My team of volunteer readers and I thank you for listening in, and we would love to have you join us next time. Just a quick reminder, this program is available in podcast, and it is intended for an audience that is blind or print impaired. If you have any questions or comments, please give us a call. As always, our number is 832-5138, and that's 919-832-5138. If you're a fan of sci-fi and have something to say, we want to hear from you.